What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of Polititeen. If you are new here, Polititeen is a podcast that hopes to spark political conversation in our youth by talking about current politics with people that are currently politically active. With that being said, thank you for tuning in to today's episode, and as always, happy listening.
Hey guys, my name is Varun Kadathala. As always, I'm the co-host of the Polititeen podcast. Here at Polititeen, we want to spark political conversation and political education amongst young minds across America and just create that kind of discussion, that kind of equitable conversation about politics, about social issues, about public policy. And to do so, to help with you guys to have that conversation, we have today a very special guest. Once again, we have Audra Doyle. She's an immigration attorney from our area, and we're having her on to discuss kind of the problems that we've seen in America, just her role, her journey into her position. And Audra, if you'd like to, you know, introduce yourself to our number of viewers.
Absolutely. As Varun said, I'm Audra Doyle, and I have been an immigration lawyer since 2007. This is the only type of law that I have ever practiced. And for the past few years, I have been filing cases for immigrants across the United States. They don't have to live in Georgia to be my client. And the type of cases that I file are called affirmative immigration cases, which means that I'm helping someone to gain a benefit of what they want to do. They could be wanting to live in the United States permanently and asking for a green card, or they could want to work here temporarily, and I would file a working visa for them. We also do naturalization, and we handle a lot of family-based cases. For example, if someone marries a U.S. citizen, I would help that person to get a green card based on that marriage. So that's a little synopsis of the type of immigration law that I practice.
Yeah, and Mrs. Doyle, if you could, what really got you, you know, going on the law pathway, and particularly, you know, eventually the immigration pathway?
Oh, wow. It's a strange and convoluted story, so I'll keep it short. Before I did this, I had another career. I was actually a teacher. And so my undergrad, wow. I have a Bachelor of Music Education, and I was a teacher for several years. But my husband was also a teacher, and we decided one of us needs to do something different. So I ended up going to law school. And when I went to law school, I had a clear path in mind, which is I wanted to be involved in real estate, in property law, but something happened that totally changed all of that. I got an internship at an immigration law firm called Jean Padberg & Associates. And I think within a few months of being at that office and doing that work with immigrants, working in immigration law, I discovered my passion, and I discovered how much I love this type of work. And honestly, I don't want to do anything else.
Right. And that's, you know, an admirable story. We talked with Larry this Monday about how passions drive people. And, you know, when you do work, you have to do it as kind of a fun encounter. When you're working, it shouldn't be kind of working. It should be having fun, having a passion, and pursuing that passion. And that's what keeps us going. I'm glad that you found your passion in immigration law. And I was just curious, Audra, just to find out, what is the most, you know, you've been working with people from different, I can imagine, different ethnicities, you know, different yes. cultural backgrounds, a lot of different people you've been working with. What is the most, you know, interesting encounter that you've had being an immigration attorney, working with so many different people? What is the most interesting encounter?
Oh gosh, many encounters. I would say a lot of times people are surprised when they meet me. You know, I'm a nice girl from Georgia, and they think, oh, she has right. such a lovely smile. I think it's interesting to watch them see, you know, what I can do for them and how I can help them, even with my pleasant personality. So, you know, a lot of people think of lawyers, they say, oh, I need a pit bull and I need someone who's really mean to go after the government. Well, I definitely go after immigration, but I sleep well every night. I'm happy in my job, and I feel like I want to give my clients a positive experience. So immigration can be so contentious. I think that they're surprised of how good an experience with this I can give them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a testament to that are your reviews. I mean, you have solid 5-star reviews like throughout the board. It's just absolutely amazing, you know, the work that you're able to do. And I think that's something that's very interesting, as Varun mentioned, a perspective that I maybe hadn't looked at this at before, was the fact that you deal with so many different cultures and different ethnicities and backgrounds of people. I can imagine that it's like an experience where you learn so much about so many different people.
Yes, that is absolutely one of the top things that I love about being an immigration lawyer. And I found that early on as an intern, that one of the things I enjoyed was getting to meet people from all over the world. I love to learn about different cultures, meet different people, and find out what makes them tick and how I can help them. So it speaks to two of my core values, which are serving others, and also a spirit of adventure. I think you definitely have to have that to be an immigration lawyer.
Right. And it comes out of the compassion of your heart, as I'm hearing. I think you're really passionate about the job. Yes. You know, we've seen a lot of immigration changes going with coronavirus and a lot of things happening. But I wanted to gauge your perspective on something more political, being an immigration attorney, having to deal with so many people. You know, ICE facilities, you know, detention facilities are obviously very, very packed. And we're seeing that during the coronavirus pandemic, you know, it's getting very, very, very hard to house people in these facilities. You know, it's obviously a bad thing to begin with. But what action needs to be taken to get these families and people out of these ICE facilities, detention centers, as fast as possible? Because we have the pandemic going on, right? Yes. It's going to cause a lot of people to get COVID-19. It's going to be a very high rate, I'm led to believe, within these very packed facilities. And even a U.S. district judge said that this should be done right now in the most rapid way possible. So what can we do to advocate for and to make this a more rapid process?
Well, there's two issues that need to be corrected. The number one problem that I think we have with these detention centers is that they are run by private companies. And they need to not be run by private companies, because that reduces the amount of oversight. And I think it reduces the constitutional protections that these detainees should be having. So number one, no more private prisons. I think that is un-American to have a private prison. And number two, a lot of the people in detention are nonviolent. They may be simply sitting there because they have violated an immigration law, not because they have committed a crime or done something terrible. They have simply overstayed their visa. So those nonviolent offenders, which I think make up a large amount of the population, can easily be released on bond. And that would definitely reduce the numbers of people sitting in detention. I think that our immigration service and ICE needs to have more oversight from Congress than what it does. Right. But unfortunately, the law says that the executive branch has a lot of power over immigration. And President Trump has taken that power as far as he can go and beyond. So I hope that Congress will start making some new laws to provide more oversight for these areas.
Yeah, definitely. I think that a great big step, and you know, you can explain this to our viewers, is what's been going on in the judicial branch of our federal government. You know, with the different rulings that they've passed in respect to, you know, DACA and Dreamers. But I think that it's very important that we also get a better perspective of immigration law as a whole. And what I mean is, I think that a lot of people see and it is true in much respect that immigration is tough, and immigrating to a new country is very difficult, especially the United States of America. And it's a lot more tough when you have these, you know, ICE patrol or ICE agents that really see themselves as, you know, almost, you know, we talk about militarizing the police, but they really take it to another extent. It's an us versus them mentality when you're talking about a lot of these ICE agents. Obviously, not to generalize, but I think the majority of them, it's an us versus them mentality. So, what can we do to move forward? And you know, can you explain a little bit the Supreme Court rulings? And then what can we do to move forward and have a better view, kind of switch the view of our immigration system?
Absolutely. So the shocking thing to me, Damien, that happened recently is based on the DACA decision from the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court gave a pretty narrow ruling. So the good news is that it kept DACA alive, but the only fault that it found with the Trump administration trying to shut down DACA is the court said that it did it the wrong way. So it totally left the door open for the administration to come back in and do it the proper way, according to the court. Now, the interesting thing is the response from USCIS. The response on their website, they put a message on their website that basically said, we don't care what the Supreme Court says. Yeah. And that blew my mind, because that is the foundation of our country, is our three branches of government and the checks and balances that the branches have on each other. I think that the United States is an amazing country with our form of government. And for one branch to say that it is not going to abide by those rules of checks and balances is beyond the pale. It's shocking. So immigration has now been ordered to reinstate DACA by a lower court. So it's removed that very contentious language from its website. But that was a little window into how they feel right now and to how much power they feel that they have. So the courts are more important today than they ever have been in my career, because immigration is not working with lawyers anymore. So for example, the simplest things that we need done, immigration refuses to talk to lawyers, refuses to talk to customers, and the only recourse that we have now is to go to federal court and sue them. For example, I have some clients that have been approved for naturalization. That means they are eligible to be a citizen, but immigration will not schedule their swearing-in oath ceremony. Wow. And I might have to file a lawsuit just simply to get them to schedule the ceremony. There's no reason why it can't be done in a much easier way and a much more fiscally responsible way than to have to take every issue to the court. But if we did not have the courts, we would be in a world of trouble. So I'm very thankful that we have our Article III courts.
And Mrs. Doyle, you're completely right. We need law and order. We need justice for our nation. That's the very principle we're founded on, you know, having that justice, that backbone of our nation. And I agree with you. I read the SCOTUS ruling on the DACA ruling, and all they said was that Trump had no good reason and no good basis to kind of get rid of DACA. And once he comes back with that, I think there may be a window for DACA to be removed, which would be terrible for all the dreamers in our nation. But speaking of, you know, law and order, Trump even threatened, I think a couple of weeks ago, even a couple of days ago, to, you know, when they're counting, because Trump, the president, the executive branch, has final say over which Americans are counted for representation in the House of Representatives for that final quota, right? And he told us that he would make sure that all undocumented immigrants are not counted as Americans within that quota. Now, the 14th Amendment says that, I'm not going to look up the exact text, but it says that all persons should be counted within, or who have lived in the United States should be counted within that kind of that tally, right? And so he's going directly against the Constitution by not allowing undocumented immigrants to be counted within that tally. All persons born or naturalized in the United States, it says. So I think that's a direct constitutional violation. Now, how the courts are going to deal with that is beyond my knowledge. How do you think the courts are going to deal with it if Trump actually goes through and doesn't include undocumented immigrants within that tally for representation?
Right. And you mentioned something in the 14th Amendment. It said born or
there was another
naturalized
in the U.S. Yeah. So undocumented immigrants were not born here and they're not naturalized. So I think that that's what the Trump administration is saying. And the lawyers that are going to file those cases have to frame this issue very carefully to show why they should be counted. So it all does depend on how the lawsuit is filed and how the issues are framed for the court to decide. Now, I want to jump back over to DACA right quick. This is Politatine, and we're talking about how to make your voice be heard and how to be active in our political process. There is a way to fix DACA that has nothing to do with President Trump. It is for Congress to act. because DACA is an executive order from President Obama, and that can be withdrawn at any time by the president, which is he is trying to do. But if Congress right. were to put forth a law for the president to sign, hopefully he wouldn't veto, then we would have DACA as a law, and it would be out of the hands of our administration to decide what happens to these young people. So something that is very important in our election coming in November are our elections for your representatives in Congress, not just for who is going to be the president. Of course, that's yeah. That's the wow factor, but who we elect as our state senators and as our local representative to Congress, those people will be going up there to make the laws that affect us for the next 2 to 4 to 6 years. And I think it's important for us all to be informed on which candidate will be serving our immigrant population the best.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that that's something that's often overlooked is local politics. I think a lot of people focus on federal, but we've mentioned multiple times on the podcast that 90% of the stuff that happens in your daily lives is local politics. And fortunately, this is kind of a mix of the two where this is going to be a federal policy that could really affect your neighbors, you know, people you go to school with. It's very interesting to see the kind of mix of both factors of both the local politicians playing a role on such a high scale, and this is extremely high stakes. But with regard to that, if we made the immigration system easier for people to migrate, would this reduce the, you know, I've heard the argument that this would actually reduce the crime rates. Now, would you be able to give a backbone to that? What would be a benefit of us making it easier to, you know, I know people that have been on a waiting list for like 7, 8, 10 years sometimes to become a U.S. citizen.
Yes. Well, what it would do is to help people not to fall in a trap. The immigration laws as they are set up now are full of traps for the unwary. And it is so easy to fall out of status or to make one simple mistake that will follow you for the rest of your life because the immigration laws in the United States are so harsh. So if a lot of these harsh penalties for immigration laws were removed, people would have a much better chance of doing it the right way. Have y'all heard that phrase before?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's what people are saying. Well, I just want them to do it the right way. Well, the right way is filled with potholes and thorny bushes and traps and things right. that hurt your case. And so many people don't do it the right way, number one, because there is no path for them, or number two, because they have one small mistake, perhaps 25 years ago, that has completely eliminated their chance to be legal in the United States. Yeah. So once in Congress can take away some of these harsh penalties that we have, and that would definitely streamline the process, make more people legal, reduce the number of people in our detention centers.
And you know what? You talk about it, and you're absolutely right, because I think we have a flawed system. The system itself is put against immigrants and against nationalization. It's very, very hard for somebody to become a natural citizen, you know, by the legal process. It's something we need to change in the future. But I think that what Donald Trump is doing with this administration is absolutely, you know, trying to curb immigration. And that's the way our nation is kind of responding right now to the influx of immigrants, trying to curb immigration. But really, immigration helps the economy. It has been shown in so many studies that, you know, immigrants who come to the United States on H-1B visas and things like these, they come for high-paying professions, skilled professions, and things like these. They're not just overextending their stay. They have a real thing to offer for our nation here and the advancement of our nation. So I guess I wanted to ask you on a more personal note, what to you is the value as an immigration attorney and as an American citizen is the value of having immigrants in the United States? Does it kind of go down to the economy, increasing our economic standpoint? Is it down to the values? You know, what is the value of having more immigrants or even less immigrants?
Oh, Varun, the value is unmeasurable. Number one, we're a nation of immigrants. Yeah. Unless you're a Native American, everyone here in the United States is you know, some sort of generational immigrant. Everybody is. And people close their eyes to that fact. And immigrants have made our country great. All this time, they have made our country great. It is an invaluable resource for our country. For me, as an immigration lawyer, and the types of cases that I file those H-1B visas that you mentioned, and those visas are normally for small companies where they need one or two workers who have very specialized skills, and they're going to help push that company to the next level. So those H-1B workers are essentially job creators. They help U.S. companies grow. The other type of case, two cases that I'm thinking of, I file a lot of national interest waivers where the immigrant is going to be working in the United States national interest. They are solving the pressing problems of our day, whether it be energy resources, whether it be diseases. I have several clients working on COVID-19 right now. How could we not want someone to come to our country and help us with these issues? It blows my mind. And I think we all know there are definitely biases against immigrants. But when you look and see the value that they bring to our country, you know, sometimes they even bring small towns back to life with an influx of money as an investor. And those things far outweigh any arguments to the contrary of why immigrants should be reduced, their numbers should be reduced. And this is called the invisible wall, President Trump's invisible wall, where he is making it as tough as possible to stop people from coming to the United States.
Yeah, it sucks because really on the basis, you have these people that are amazing people that really want to see, they're coming to this country, not only in self-interest, oftentimes either they're coming to escape, you know, a past that's difficult. And on top of that, they're a specialized worker and they have so much to offer for this country. But oftentimes they also do love the American dream and they love America and they love the you know, it being the land of opportunity. So they come over here and they're as dedicated to we were taking a political compass test the other day, and you know, it was we were talking about what is it, pride in your nation, is it good to have, yeah, go ahead,
yeah, we're talking about pride in our nation, is it good to be proud of your nation just because you were born in it?
Yeah, and you know, some of these people aren't even born here and they're proud of it. And that's like a different type of pride. Yeah. You know, when you choose to have pride for something that you in terms should have no association with, I think that that's maybe where you can say this person is really dedicated to helping us develop as a nation. And it's unfortunate that we're having, you know, this invisible wall and these ideals and some of these nations don't, or some of these immigrants rather, don't feel at ease because of the circumstances and the rhetoric that is being you know, released by not only this administration now. The difficult thing is that it's now being released by members of the Republican Party who are just doing everything to support Donald Trump and to get his approval. So now, I think me and Varun were talking about as well how Asian Americans they actually used to vote Republican a lot. You know, now it's like, how are you going to vote Republican when they're saying these, you know, they're trying these disgusting.
And a lot of my cousins are on H-1B visas. It's very, very popular within the Asian American population.
Yeah. You know, that is always so interesting to me. I've heard the same thing from my customers, not only Asian American, but from a lot of different places in the world, how much they like President Trump. And they're my client. They're currently going through the immigration process. Yeah. And I just look at them like, this is why your case is so hard.
Yeah.
I love him.
Absolutely.
So, I guess he is a very, charismatic figure, and people do gravitate towards that. But I want people to look at the issues and look and see what he is supporting. Also look and see who else supports him. What sort of groups are supporting him and think that his ideas are wonderful? Those are the types of things we should be looking at when we decide on who to vote.
Yeah.
And you're right. And why I'm saying it is because the Asian American minority has basically had every single obstacle taken out of their way. Right. They're called a model minority in a lot of circumstances because their obstacles has been kind of removed. You know, we've had a lot of our obstacles in our community removed, whereas with our Hispanic counterparts or African-American counterparts still face the obstacles that we got removed 10, 20 years ago. So I think that Asian Americans in a lot of circumstances, myself included, you know, we don't recognize the privilege that we really have. by having all these obstacles removed. But I wanted to mention to you, with COVID-19, the whole pandemic going on, I am very eager to see our economy recover, our entire country recover, but it doesn't look like a possibility. And one of the reasons is very, very related to you and your job. It's because immigrants are not being able to come to America, and economic growth has been shown to be stimulated by immigrants coming in, immigrants working in these professions. And the truth of the matter is that ever since Trump has become president, 50% of all legal immigration has been curbed. 50%, which is a huge, huge, huge measure. And I think that it's going to make our country very, very difficult in terms of economic growth come the end of COVID-19, the reopening of the economy. It's going to be very hard ask. And I think that's just, it's a terrible thing to think about. The fact that, you know, it's going to be even harder for our country to recover just because of what the president has done in terms of things as distant as immigration.
Absolutely. I totally agree with your analysis. We have had a 50% reduction in immigration. It's been, the past 3 years have been extremely difficult. And I definitely see that happening every day with the amount of pushback I get on all of my cases.
Right.
And what is happening, we call it brain drain. So the best and the brightest who can come to the United States, study at phenomenal educational institutions, are not staying in the U.S. because they don't feel welcome. They don't feel welcome to stay here in the U.S. and innovate. And I'm thinking Silicon Valley. I'm thinking Wall Street, you know, the innovators, the movers and the shakers, the business makers, people filing patents. They're taking all of that talent back home. Mm-hmm. And it's a real shame for the United States because that's how we grow jobs here. We are post-industrial. We need to keep establishing businesses that will help people to stay working. So it is definitely going to hurt our economy for the people that can create jobs to not want to come here.
Yeah, no, and you talk about like the potholes in the road to citizenship, or oftentimes even to becoming a resident in the United States. Yeah. And something that I, you know, obviously being Hispanic, me and you personally, you know, we've talked about my situation in the past, and I like bringing that into light. Because of the fact that I feel like if anyone can relate to that, they will really understand, you know, they'll get a grasp that they're not alone through this struggle that really is the immigration process. But one thing that I've noticed is particularly in my uncles and, you know, in my dad, is that while they are residents, they are scared. And I genuinely mean this by the word scared. They are fearful to become a citizen. And the reason is because they feel like if something in their past comes up, more so with my uncles, really my dad, to be honest, he would love to become a U.S. citizen. He just hasn't, honestly, with the time, it's just been bad. But with my uncles, they fear, you know, I had an uncle tell me a story about how when he applied to be a U.S. citizen, they ask if you have ever been arrested, right? Not charged, not literally like tried and found guilty. They ask if you've ever been handcuffed, arrested. And he said no, because he really didn't recall an incident where he had been arrested. And they respond to him like a couple months later, and they're like, oh, you forgot this one incident where you were handcuffed after being pulled over. And he was like, I didn't even like remember that. So he genuinely got afraid, and he felt like they were, you know, they were going to then pursue that and maybe even take away his residency. So is this, you know, I sent an article over to Rune as well, where there's an individual, I didn't get to read the whole article, but there's an individual who is now facing the possibility because, you know, the Attorney General of the United States of America reopened the investigation onto him, where he was seeking asylum here in the United States. And now since the investigation is reopened, he might lose his residency and be sent back to his country, where they're literally telling the United States, we're going to kill him. So is it a real possibility? Should they be scared to apply for the citizenship?
Everyone who wants to apply for citizenship is going to go through that level of scrutiny. And 2020 is the most scrutiny I have ever seen on naturalization applications. They're going to go comb through it with a fine-tooth comb and try to find any sort of problem that existed when you got your green card. That's straight from the top, is straight from President Trump and Mr. Miller. They are definitely doing that. So anybody that wants to be a citizen, they feel that like they may have a little boo-boo in their past, they need to consult with an immigration lawyer. because just based on what you told me about your uncle, this sounds like a problem that can be fixed. But I wouldn't be able to say yes or no on that until I saw the arrest record, figured out exactly what happened, because in immigration law, it says that an arrest is sometimes considered a conviction.
Yeah. Wow.
Even if the case is expunged, even if you were never convicted, it can be considered a conviction under immigration law in certain circumstances.
Wow.
Yeah, people don't know that. That was enacted in around 1997, and it has created a big roadblock for a lot of people.
Hey guys, we're going to skip to a quick ad break, and we'll be back with Audra here in a couple of minutes. Thank you so much.
Wow, that's insane. You know, I have my own kind of, I have a funny story actually to bring up for this podcast, just to lighten the mood a little bit. My grandma applied for citizenship a couple of years ago, and what happened was they asked her, do you have any communists in the family, right? So what happened is in India, her father used to go around saying, I'm a communist, because they used to be scared of communists, right? Uh-huh. They used to be like, if you're a communist, you know, you're a strong guy. So he's like, I'm a communist, and my entire family is a communist. So she went there and she proudly said, my dad's a communist. Right. And so after that, they were like, you know, we don't want her. She has kind of communist ties. And I was like, that was just a really funny story. I just wanted to share with any of our viewers and with you guys.
Yes. They don't like it when you have affiliation with the Communist Party. That's for sure. But hopefully your grandma got approved after all that was sorted out.
Yeah, I know. And after that, she was like, you know what? I'm almost 70 years old. I'm just going to stop now. And I'm just going to move on with my life. But the other thing I wanted to bring up. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Yuka.
Yeah, I was just going to say on a more serious note, you know, we had this going on a couple of weeks ago, I think a couple of months ago, the ICE administration kind of saying that any college student who's an immigrant and has a college that's only offering online classes cannot stay in the United States. And Harvard and MIT sued ICE for doing so, and the Trump administration especially. So, I mean, how do you feel about that? Because I feel like people who go to Harvard, people who go to any university in the United States have worked their butt off to go to that university, to be in the United States, to be in our great nation. And by the Trump administration saying that they can't stay here, they got to go back to their own, I guess, their own home countries, it's denying them that spot, that opportunity to learn as much and to become American citizens, denying their learning curve towards becoming more integrated. So, I mean, how do you feel about that policy? Is that something that, you know, colleges can really sue the government for doing?
Yes, they certainly can. And I'm very glad that they did. There were multiple, more than 10 lawsuits brought about this problem to various courts in the U.S. And 2 weeks after ICE had said that those people could not attend online classes, they withdrew that guidance. And now we're back to the status quo, which I'm very thankful about. I was frankly shocked and dismayed that they would even consider punishing students whose universities were trying to keep them safe in a pandemic. I'm kind of speechless that they would do that. There is a new article that just came out from Forbes. So anyone who's interested in immigration, surprisingly, Forbes has a lot of great immigration articles. It says Harvard is not going to be able to accept any new international students due to these immigration rules. So the dean of Harvard, it says they told first-year international students they could not come to Harvard this fall because the Trump administration still has not corrected this issue to be reasonable in a pandemic and allow students to attend online. Not only does it harm our international students, who, as you say, have worked their butts off to go to these fantastic schools, it hurts the universities, which are sometimes the going enterprise in a town. For example, the University of Georgia. I think Athens, Georgia would be a sleepy little town without such a big school there. Yeah. And so the international students are paying out-of-state tuition. They're using all the resources.
Can you still hear her, Damien? I think she got
Yeah, no. I can't hear her.
Audra, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Oh, sorry,
I think you cut out for a little bit. I think you can trace it back and
No. It was to the point where you were saying that the university. I think it was after you'd mentioned Athens.
Yeah, how Athens it would be UGA.
I'll say that part again. So, for example, Athens, Georgia would be a sleepy little town if it didn't have the University of Georgia there. And a lot of times the university is the engine for the local economy. So without these international students who are paying the highest tuition, who need all of these local resources and are paying for them, these towns and these universities are going to suffer. And those are big employers in a lot of places.
Yeah, I agree with you 1,000%. But, you know, this I don't know why this started racing my mind. I was thinking about international affairs when you brought up the fact that they were, you know, that they were accepting international students. And it made me think about the rhetoric that Trump is using. You know, obviously we're talking about coronavirus right now, to describe coronavirus. You know, whether he's calling it the China virus or, you know, whether he's calling it the Asian, whatever he wants to call it. Honestly, it's disgusting. And some of the things, you know, frankly, I wouldn't even repeat off the podcast, let alone on the podcast. So what role does this play in the comfort? Like, what role does the direct do you have a circumstance that you could share with us? Or do you just know in general what role this rhetoric really plays in people not only wanting to immigrate here, but also wanting to stay here? Because I know that you mentioned the fact that oftentimes they leave because they don't feel welcome here.
Yes, I have seen in the past year more and more clients need to leave the United States and go to another country because their immigration dreams were just not going to come true. And several times we've had to advise the client and say, you know what, this case is not going to work. It would have worked 5 years ago, but because of this administration, it's not going to work now. You are better off moving to Canada than to stay in the United States and try to pursue this application.
Wow.
So I have seen a direct result of that rhetoric. I have seen fear in my clients. And on the other side, I see so many people who normally are very mild-mannered say some pretty rough things about immigrants that are unacceptable. And it's, you know, our leader is leading us down this path of animosity towards immigrants, and it mm-hmm. should not be that way.
Yeah.
Xenophobia is way too rampant right now. And I agree with you on that standpoint that the president is empowering these kind of, you know, indirect feelings to come out and to really become public. A lot of people are becoming empowered by this rhetoric, and I don't think it's okay in any circumstance, because we as Americans have to be accepting of every single person that comes here as an immigrant, as a legal immigrant, as a person seeking refuge from their nation. At the end of the day, you know, they're simply seeking refuge. And I feel bad for anybody who uses xenophobic language or just does not respect that. They're un-American. And I say that with a true conviction. Now, I did want to talk to you. Go ahead, Audra.
Yeah, and I wanted to add that, you know, our nation is founded on ideas of equality, civil discourse. You know, the way our government is set up, if we disagree with what's happening, we have a way to correct the problems. So all of this animosity, name-calling, finger-pointing, it's un-American. It's not our way of handling these problems.
And that's an interesting point, because I was going to talk to you about something. It's the government covering up immigration flaws with the system, because I think we can't have civil discourse, any of these educated political discussions, without first addressing what the issues actually are, right? So there's a Netflix documentary which is coming out. I don't know if you've heard of it, but there's a scene in that documentary wherein there's ICE officials coming into a home, breaking into a person's home with no kind of arrest warrant, no record of anything, and what they're told to do is arrest as many people as possible, detain as many people as possible, and that's the orders that they were given in that video, right? So the Trump administration, what they did is they're trying to halt the release of the Netflix documentary until after the 2020 election. And what that shows to me is a blatant disregard for facts, a blatant disregard for the actual issues and telling Americans about the real issues, but that is a political play at power. I know you probably feel very strongly about this, but I'd like to hear your opinions.
Yeah, well, you know what, Varun? It shows to me that they know that it's true and they don't want people to see it.
Right.
That's the bare fact right there. That is something that's going to hurt him. And that shows to me that it is true. Because if it wasn't true, what would they have to worry about?
Exactly.
And yeah. I can promise you that has definitely been happening. As far as ICE entering a home, they're not supposed to enter a residence unless someone opens the door or gives them access in some way. So what I tell my clients is, you do not have to open the door when someone comes and knocks on your door. And if you feel that it is ICE and they're coming to arrest you, you do not have to open the door unless they have a properly signed arrest warrant signed by a judge. So what you will do is ask them to slide it under the door or show it through the window, and you can examine the document before you ever have to open the door. That's a common misconception. And, you know, if you're in that danger where you may be picked up, you need to let your other family members know that as well. Do not open the door.
Yeah. Yeah. And right now what's happening is that in that video, especially, they were lying to get inside immigrants' homes, which is blatantly illegal. Right. You know, what you're saying is very true, but also we're having people, like, you know, break the law being in a government agency. That's absolutely.
You know, I'm sorry to say, they can lie. They can tell a lie to get you to open the door.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's why you should not trust what they say. You should trust what the paper that they're holding says and make sure that it's signed by a judge.
That's honestly, and you know, it's shocking. It leaves me at a loss for words, but I can, you know, again, I think maybe Varun can't relate on such a front, but I think that I would definitely not be surprised if he could, but it leaves a sense of paranoia. And it leaves a huge sense of paranoia in my relatives. It leaves a fear. I mean, again, you know, with the story that I always tell on the podcast, I was scared any time I would see a police cruise. Like, I have a legitimate panic attack, and I'm not one for like ever talking about or like, you know, trying to get sob or pity from mental health issues. But yeah, Varun definitely knows that about me. But I would have a genuine panic attack every time that I would, you know, I'd be driving with my dad and I'd see a cop behind us, and like I'd start freaking out. Or you know, I remember going on family trips to Texas, and you have to pass through checkpoints. And every time that we'd pass through a checkpoint, like, I'd start having a panic attack. So I can't imagine these households that you know, it's just heartbreaking to think that they can't even open their door.
Absolutely. And the main issue that I have with this fear of persecution, living in fear, is one day these same people may actually get to be a U.S. citizen. And what kind of citizens are we creating to be afraid of our government, to distrust our government, distrust our law enforcement officials, and to dislike our country who has treated them so badly? That is not the way we want to welcome people to the U.S. and ask them to be good, upstanding citizens when the time comes after you've treated them terribly for all these years.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but it's scary to think that the next generation of terrorists aren't being grown in a foreign country. They're being, you know, grown in detention centers that we have in Texas.
I agree. I 100%. Yeah. You're making people into extremists, and you're pushing them into a corner, and they're going to fight back eventually. It's a terrible thing to do.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to talk to you about one thing. We had a guest on, Larry Lawton, this Monday, and he's a big, you know, he was an ex-con who comes back and tells kids about his experiences and tries to kind of curb the amount of cons we have in our system. And what he said was that after 9/11, a lot of these Muslim people, even though they weren't related to terrorism or anything, extremism, anything like that, what they were doing was cheering on these kind of terrorists after 9/11. And I think part of the reason is because we don't accept them. You know, I think that if we accepted every single person for who they were, we would curb homegrown terrorists. Not 9/11 especially, but that's terrible. That's a terrible example to put that out there. But homegrown terrorism is the main issue that I'm looking at right now. The fact that people don't feel welcome in their own shoes. And when people don't feel welcome, they're pushed to the extremes and doing things that they would normally do. You know, homegrown extremism is something that I feel very strongly about, and that closely ties into immigration.
We cannot marginalize these groups. We cannot have them living on the fringes of our society, picking up the crumbs that Americans leave behind for them. They need to be brought into our society and accepted just like everyone else. Or you're right, that is what happens.
Yeah, no, and well, Mrs. Doyle, what can we do here as a, you know, as young adults? You know, obviously we still can't vote or anything, but you know, we created the podcast for a variety of issues, but I always say that I'm a centrist, and I said it on the podcast a bunch of times. But in being a centrist, Trump is so far right that I apologize, and I always try to have a conversation about it and try to see different people's viewpoints. But after you have kids in cages, I lost it. And I've mentioned it before on the podcast where I used to make jokes where it was like Trump 2020, and you could find me like every once in a while. There's pictures of me before these events where like I'd be in a MAGA hat and just like be messing around with my friends, because really I've always been accepting of different beliefs. But once I learned the truth behind what was happening, I mean, these kids are being molested by ICE agents. This is absolutely disgusting. And the thing is, you can't say, oh, well, it's not Trump's fault because blah, blah. It's literally his policy.
Yes. Yes. He has a group of people around him who are definitely whispering in his ear and helping him to shape these terrible policies. So what we can do, you know, even if you can't vote, you will be eligible to vote very soon. And you can still work on campaigns. You can still promote the candidate that you like. You can share their Facebook posts. You know, everything's on social media these days. So getting out the truth about these issues is a great way for young people to be involved and to set the tone to a correct tone for the United States.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And I think that it goes.
Doing it. This is podcast.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for the kind words. I think it goes beyond policy. You know, I think, Audra, I think it goes into what people say and what people do and what every single person does. You know, as Larry said this Monday, go out and do, you know, perform one act of kindness every day. Be accepting of your neighbors, no matter what their ethnicity is, no matter what their immigration status is. I don't care what race they are, what you know, sexuality they are. You have to accept them, and that's how we move forward, you know, into not kind of creating homegrown terrorists, but being a better country and being better people. When we're having the president sprue xenophobic kind of words out of his mouth, I think words are arguably more you know, impactful than policy. Because when we have xenophobic words put out, you're not only creating policy to kind of curb immigration, you're going to have a lasting impact, because 10 years down the lane, if we have better policy, we're still going to have these people, you know, brainwashed and just empowered to, you know, promote xenophobia. And that, more than policy, I think is a really important thing. And that's my perspective. I think words, xenophobic words, are really more detrimental than policy.
And Varun, I've learned, you know, this is off of immigration, but with the recent Black Lives Movement, I have seen that it's not enough to just be quiet. We have to speak out when we see these injustices.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have to say, you know, when someone is spewing xenophobic remarks, we have to say, that's not right. You know, you shouldn't be saying that. And we have to actually speak up for what we feel is right, too. I think there is a large majority of Americans who don't feel that way, but now it is our job to not only be a good person, but we have to speak up and say, that's not right.
Yeah, you know, no, what? Definitely.
On the first episode we had, I'm going to interject here for a little bit, Damien, for one quick quote. On the first episode we had, I remember one of the things I said was that silence is complicity. And that's truly what it is, based upon what you say. If you're silent about the issues that are hurting Americans and hurting immigrants, you're part of the problem.
Yeah, it's 1,000% true. I think we were talking about this again on our bonus episode, which you can check out on Patreon at patreon.com/politatine. On that bonus episode, we have a segment where this is really just like literally just teens talking and us just conversing.
Yeah.
And we were talking to one of our friends, and I was like, hasn't it gotten to a point where it's just like, it's not, you know, Donald Trump could create the best, the most conservative policy and everything falls under the Republic, you know, ideals and he's making, you know, the policy that's perfect and perfect and perfect. But hasn't it gotten to the point that the policy that he's making and the remarks that he's making that are just, you can't say that they're not racist. I mean, they're just racist. They're ignorant. And I think that it's gotten to a point where ignorance repeated becomes bigotry. And it really is upsetting that it's gotten to that point. And it's become a moral issue beyond that. And that's why I feel so strongly about the issue that you can't say that you support Donald Trump and not support his rhetoric. And sometimes I say this a lot of the time, but sometimes I just wish he would lie. Like, I wish he would just keep it inside, because honestly, it's a lot more hurtful, I think, when you hear it said. And it, you know, some people say, I think this was something that he said that my friend responded to us with. He was like, well, you know, Joe Biden there's things that show that Joe Biden is just as racist. And I was like, yeah, but you have to draw conclusions. In that sense, he's not coming out and saying just these things. And if he is, at least he has the decency of hiding it.
Yeah. President Trump is like no other president in our entire nation's history, as everyone knows. I'm frankly still surprised that he was elected. I don't know if you guys feel that way sometimes, like you're having a moment like, is this real life?
Yeah.
I tweeted a couple of days ago, like, what a world we're living in.
Wow. Just say wow to these things. And, you know, we need to get our country back on track. And we need to get our country back to civil discourse, where Congress can actually work together for the good of the country. You know, President Trump has totally polarized everything as much as he can. And Congress is definitely that way as well. So we need our elected officials to work together for the good of our country. And I think we're in a pandemic right now, partly because of this polarization.
Yeah,
that is absolutely. Not, we are not recovering from.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have neighbors. I used to have a neighbor last year. He moved out. But, you know, he lived next to me. And what he said was that, like, you know, Varun, I'm not racist. Because, you know, I have a bunch of black friends. I have a bunch of Indian friends. I have a lot of Asian friends, but I'm still a Trump supporter. Now, what I said to that may be kind of controversial, but I was like, Mr. blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to expose his name on the podcast. But what I said was that, you know, you may have a bunch of black friends, Asian friends, but when you stand for a president who goes to a rally where the KKK and Black Lives Matter protesters are on opposite sides, and he says there was good people on both sides of the line, basically supporting and not saying anything about KKK, and basically supporting their cause, you can't not be racist. You know, when you're supporting a president like that, you're indirectly being racist, and people have to reevaluate where they're standing on these issues. You know, you have to consider who are your neighbors. You know, I think we have to just have more conversations amongst one another. I'm going to bring in something. There's a guy named Daryl Davis. You know, he's a musician, a black musician, and he converted over 100 members of the KKK to give up their robes, give their robes to him. And the way he did that was by having conversation, understanding, and helping them understand that the black community is not people who are inferior. You know, there are people who you can talk to, there are people who you can go out and communicate with. So I would say for anybody who's kind of supporting the president's statements and xenophobic statements, I would say have a discussion with somebody of a minority status and understand who they are and just really have these discussions. And that's what we promote here at PolitiTeam. We promote healthy conversations and healthy political discussions, and that's going to help our nation move forward.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I wanted to bring up an interesting point. I just recalled that, you know, you told me that, if I'm not mistaken, you taught music. So I wanted to know what you know, obviously, what's your personal taste in music? I'm a big music guy myself. I have a vinyl wall literally right behind me that I've shown Varun. And I love music, but I love music. I love J. Cole in particular. And the reason I love J. Cole is because he really speaks on issues that actually matter, as opposed to, you know, just making rap songs about things that don't. There's songs for everything, but I really love songs that have a message. And so my question is, you know, of course, what type of – I would love to hear what type of music you're interested in. But what type of music – or what role can music play in shaping our culture and our values and thus the immigration system?
Oh, man, that's a great question. Number one, as a musician and with that music degree, I love all types of music. I think there's very few things that I won't listen to. But if you were to ride in the car with me, you probably would hear Radiohead. That gives me an idea. I love Radiohead, love Tom York, love those guys. So as far as what music can do to help this problem, famous musicians are a huge stage and they have a big voice. They are able to share wonderful ideas and to get people on board with good things or the opposite, to divide people. So people who are celebrities have the biggest voice these days in our culture, and music, definitely, if you're a music celebrity, you can have a huge voice in talking about these issues and talking about immigration. Plus, we now have the Latin Grammys, and with our country being so diverse, international music is becoming more popular by the year, and I'd love to see when international artists come to the U.S. and make a name for themselves. You know, think about Rihanna right now is a fun one, Adele from the U.K., so many. And so they have all gone through the immigration process.
Yeah.
I will bet you good money that Rihanna either has a green card or she's a U.S. citizen by now. And so that means she has actually been through this process. And so they have, they're immigrants. So people love them. And I think it would surprise them to think of that famous artist in that way.
Yeah, no. And an interesting thing that you bring up, you know, we always bring up, we talked about earlier on the podcast that people come to this country and they have very, like skills that are necessary, and they're trying to really benefit this country. And it's interesting to think that, you know, if I had to say who's the biggest artist right now, I'd probably say Drake. And Drake's an immigrant, you know, he's from Canada. Another thing on my vinyl wall, I have 21 Savage. And an interesting thing, I don't know if you had the whole, if you knew the whole controversy that happened, but but, you know, there was the whole theory that the speculation that because of his, you know, on the song A Lot, he came out with the full version of the song. And he says that there's kids locked up in the border. And, you know, he makes statements about, you know, Trump's administration. And that after that, it was very coincidental that that he was, you know, he was looked into. Yeah, he was looked into by ICE. Do you think that there's a correlation?
Absolutely. 100%. I'm just sorry to say that somebody like him, who is so famous, did not reach out and get help on his immigration case, because that probably could have been fixed a long time ago. But people do close their eyes to the problem sometimes. They're like, oh, it'll be fine. They'll, you know, put it off till tomorrow. But, you know, these immigration issues can even bite the biggest star.
Yeah.
Yeah. It takes.
You guys remember Stranger Things? The show?
Yes.
Yeah, I watched a couple episodes.
One of the actors, I believe, on Stranger Things actually got barred from the United States because of some arrests that he had related to drugs. And they had to redo part of the series because he could not come in and play that role. So immigration is even preventing TV shows from happening.
Wow. Well, who are we to stop people from immigrating, people from pursuing their dreams? That I don't think that's our right. You know, 21 Savage was detained for over a week in ICE facilities. It was absolutely insane. And it shows us that, you know, ICE and kind of anti-immigration policies take no borders. There's no boundaries for this kind of policies to happen. Now that said, we're almost at the end of our segment here. And I didn't realize it would be this long, but it's been almost 56 minutes since we started our podcast. It doesn't seem like that, obviously. But I was going to end on this. I was just going to say that, first of all, silence is complicity. And second of all, use your platform. Audra, you talked about having musicians using their platforms. Even Damian talked about it as well, you know, introduced that point, having J. Cole, people like, you know, a lot of different artists across the nation like Drake using their platforms to promote the morally good. I would say no matter how big your following, you do have a following as an individual, whether it's via social media, whether it's through your circles. Use your circles and just spread what you think. And I think that we should all play a role in actively counteracting xenophobia, not standing over there and ignoring it, but saying that that's not okay. And we should accept everybody, no matter their status as an immigrant, their minority status. It should all be behind us.
Varun, I absolutely agree with you. Now is not the time to be silent. You are right. Silence is complicity. It's not enough to just be a good person and be quiet. We have to speak out when we see things that are wrong, and we have to help people to understand that their words can be hurting others. And in our past, we haven't done that, but it needs to be done now. So my takeaway and the thing that I try to do every day is to just be kind. Be kind to every person that I encounter. Think about what they might be going through. And if everyone could just be a little kinder to another person in their life, that is eventually going to reach so many people.
Yeah. And it's perfect that you bring that up, because our last question is always, if you had one saying, thing, or message that you could leave to our youth, what would it be? And if you have one right now, I think that what you just said was absolutely perfect. But would you like to, you know, double down on that and say that that's your message to America's youth moving forward?
That is my message to America's youth moving forward. I saw a great picture the other day, and I'm sure you've heard this phrase that says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And the picture was showing how every one of the world's major religions has that idea as a central tenet. So it's not a religious thing, it's a people thing. And no matter what you believe or don't believe, or how, you know, you feel about religion, we all can be kind to each other.
Yes, definitely. And with that being said, you know, we want to thank you for coming on the podcast and having an insightful conversation with us about a variety of issues, especially pertaining to immigration. You know, we hope to have you on the podcast soon and continue this conversation another day. And hopefully the next time you come on, we could have taken a big step forward in immigration as a whole. But once again, thank you for coming on. Thank you for our listeners for tuning into this episode. With that being said, we hope that you guys have an amazing rest of your day.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for watching today's episode of the Politatine podcast. As always, we appreciate and thank you for your support over these past couple of weeks as we've grown as a podcast and as a duo between myself and Damien. And please follow us on Twitter at Politatine Show. And always, as always, make sure to follow us on Instagram at Politatine Show, and to connect with us via email at politatinepodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to check out our newly hosted website at politatinepodcast.com. And lastly, please consider becoming a sponsor, a donor for our campaign on Patreon. You can get a link to that through our website at www.politatinepodcast.com. And through becoming a sponsor, you can get some amazing exclusive perks, such as a way to contact us for questions, suggestions, becoming part of an exclusive community where you can kind of talk about your political viewpoints and ask questions of our guests as they come on, you know, live streams of us talking, and even posters, stickers to rep Politatine. So as always, have a great rest of your day, and thank you so much for your support over these past couple of weeks. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you so much.